the late 80s, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the podcast Pat Trek. My continuing mission to introduce my friend Patrick to the best show that ever ran on television, and to boldly go where millions of white guys with glasses have gone before.
Hello, welcome to Pat Trek. This is the show where my friend Pat O'Rourke introduces me, Patrick Winninger, to Star Trek, a show that I've never seen.
Star Trek, The Next Generation.
Okay,
Patrick, we got to be specific.
Okay.
And you know what we didn't do last time? I felt like such an idiot.
We didn't say the name of the episode.
We never said the name of the episode. So, Patrick, the name of this episode is?
Angel One.
Ooh, Angel One. We got that out there.
Check.
So we did it.
Yep.
We are professional podcasters now. And joining us today is Catherine Faluca. Welcome, Catherine.
Hi, guys. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thanks for being here.
Yeah, thank you for coming by. So, scale of 1 to 10, how big of a Star Trek The Next Generation fan are you?
Oh, my gosh. Fan? I mean, I would say I would maybe go like a 6 or 7.
6 or 7,
I have a lot of nostalgia for Star Trek Next Gen.
Ah.
But to be honest, I'm not like super familiar with the show itself.
Mm-hmm.
So this was a cool experience.
Where does the nostalgia come from?
So my dad was a huge Star Trek fan, like every version of Star Trek, every movie. When I was a kid, he used to videotape every single episode of Next Gen. He would sit in our living room, separate from our dinner table in the kitchen. While we all sat in there, he would videotape the episode. He wanted to be there so he could cut out all the commercials. So he knew what he was doing.
Yeah. Well, that's awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Well, we just watched Angel One together, and I enjoyed this episode. I thought it was pretty good. Pretty good. You guys are both giving me looks out of the sides of your eyes.
It was weird. It was a weird episode.
There was a lot going on.
Yeah.
A lot going on in there.
Well, we'll get into that a little bit more, but first, let's do some Patrick's log.
Yeah. All right. So this is what was going on in the real world the week that this came out, which was January 25th, 1988. So I've just got the New York Times news summary for that week. One thing that's in the news is a new arms deal that the U.S. was trying to do, and it says that conditions are likely to be attached by a Senator Joseph R. Biden Jr.
Who is the arms deal with?
I don't know. I think it was just like in general, like some Cold War arms accord of who we're giving weapons to.
I gotcha. There's a bit of a Cold War going on this episode with
the Romulans. Yeah. And another thing that I found that was pretty interesting was Al Sharpton was in the news because it said reports had been coming up that he was an FBI informant, which had caused uneasiness among black New Yorkers who had been forging an uneasy alliance with him because, you know, the FBI recorded people like MLK and they did a lot of fucked up stuff to the civil rights movement. But I think Al Sharpton was like an informant on the mafia.
Oh, wow.
Like in the 70s. Yeah, and it's like a part of his life that is rarely talked about, but he like recorded mob bosses and stuff. But because it was with the FBI, you know, it was a big scandal when it came out.
Yeah.
I feel like there should be a movie about that or something.
I saw a picture of him, and it was like the early 80s, and he's just wearing, like, he was super fat Al Sharpton, too. And he had, like, enormous puffy hair, a huge gold chain, and just, like, wearing all parachute material.
Again, like the gentleman in this episode of Star Trek.
He was basically wearing the outfits that the men wear on Angel One.
Oh, my God.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Al Sharpton has this weird reputation among the African American community. I am not an African American, but I do know different people have very strong opinions.
Yeah. They
about
either
him.
Like love him or hate him.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah, he was an informant on the mafia.
Wow.
I totally forgot about that until I saw that. It was like, oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, wow.
I don't think I ever knew that. I would love to know more about
that. Yeah, he like recorded people with a camera that was like hidden in a suitcase and like, you know, recorded like mafia dealings and stuff like that. It's like,
wow.
Jesus, he could have been killed.
Yeah. Why was he able to have that kind of access
to
the mafia?
I have no idea. That's the other... I don't know
so
that much about it.
Let's not talk about Star Trek at all. Right. Let's just get into
a podcast
Al Sharpton.
About Al Sharpton's career as an informant on the mafia.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. That could be a whole other podcast.
Yeah, it should be. We should do the Sharptonologues or something.
Yeah.
The Sharpcast. I don't know. Okay. Well, should we get into it?
Yeah.
All right.
So we, as we said, we all just watched this episode here at the Peach Pit Studio. And I think, Catherine, you agreed this was another weird one, kind of.
It felt weird. It felt a little uncomfortable. The subject matter was a little...
Yeah.
I'll give you that.
Yeah. I mean, we knew what they were going for. You know, they were, like, Pat, like you were saying earlier, they were trying to get at that, you know, women's rights throughout the years.
Right.
But they flip-flopped it, and so it felt very... pro men's rights.
Yeah.
Which is weird. Yeah, because you can tell their agenda is about gender equality.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, Star Trek has always been a relatively forward-looking show. At least they're trying to be at all times. And this was their attempt at saying, like, oppression is happening.
Yeah, they're trying to make
it changing.
They're trying to make an allegory. Because, like, what happens at the beginning is, like, okay, this freighter got attacked or something, got hit by an asteroid. Escape pods went to this planet, Angel One, and they're very clear at the beginning. It's like it's a female-dominated society. Right. So that's
they're
like
the hunters, the warriors.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And men are like smaller or something.
And hairless.
Yeah.
Well, they have hair on top of their heads, but none of them have any sort of
body hair.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
and this is the 80s. Everybody had body hair.
Right. And I think, what did they say? It's like it's an oligarchical society or something. So
yeah,
it's like
there was a parliament.
But it's dominated entirely by six ministresses, I think.
Mistresses.
Okay.
Which my question is, why were they ruling the entire planet? You know,
yeah,
it's not just like a region of the planet. It was like the whole planet.
And yeah, to get into like some plot holes really early, but this woman is running the planet, and she's worried about like two dudes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, they said it was sparsely populated.
Okay. All right. That's fair.
Okay, I missed that.
So maybe it's just like there's just this one city. And yeah. So they're like, yeah, you know, it's on the same level as like 20th century, mid 20th century Earth. Or something.
Right.
That's what they said.
And they even made the comparison of the women who run this planet to men hundreds of years ago.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So they like try to hail the planet, but they're like, all right, Troy, you do it because you're a woman and that's pretty much what they expect. And they're just really short with them. They're like, oh, well, I guess we'll tolerate you coming.
Yeah, at first, Troy claims that it's a diplomatic mission.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And they're like, man, we have no interest in that. But once they bring up the fact that there might be some people from the Federation who are deserted or who landed on the planet, then suddenly they become interested.
Yeah. And so they're like, all right, well, we'll send a team of, was it Data, Troy, Yar, and Riker to go to this like female-dominated planet. Great choice, sending Riker.
Yeah, yeah. The second you see Riker in that group, it's like,
Yeah, boy. We all laughed when that happened. It was just like, oh man, he's going to get into some shenanigans.
Yeah, he has to.
Yeah, some classic Riker business.
Mm-hmm. There's no mopey Riker this
episode. Right, he's not in the sad desert holodeck room. every time he goes off to shore leave, he just... turns into like a teenager, basically, is what I've noticed in this show.
He does. Well, you know, he can't help that the ladies like him. They do.
He's a charmer.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So let me ask you this, Catherine. Mm-hmm. Riker with a beard or without a beard?
Oh,
which one's more charming?
Gosh. Oh, that's so hard to say. I guess maybe I would say without.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I think of Jonathan Frakes with a beard, I like think of him from Beyond Belief when he hosted that show. And it was just like too jarring for me.
Yeah.
Well, on their way to the transporter, they run into Wesley and some friend of his, and they're going to like some skiing lesson in the holodeck.
Yeah.
And they're like wearing a bunch of tinfoil or something. And we only see this because it comes back later. But and they just like start throwing snow at each other in the holodeck immediately, which I guess is skiing.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they go down.
I want to interrupt, but I want to say my favorite quote from the show came at that part where Riker ran into Is it Wesley Crusher?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He said, sit in some deep powder to him.
Oh, that was weird. to which Wesley replies, there's plenty of powder in the holodeck.
What the hell does that mean?
It's a holodeck. You can have as much powder as you want.
Oh, okay. That's just a weird exchange.
It was a weird exchange.
It might have the been writing a failed on this. Reference to coke, I think.
Yeah, it did sound like cocaine. Yeah, like that's what they were talking about.
The writing in this episode's a little clunky at times, yes.
Yeah, so they go down to Angel One, which I think we were talking about when we were watching or just before. Angel One is a weird name for this planet.
Yeah. Where does that come from?
Yeah, why is it called this?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. Is it one of those situations where that's what the Federation calls it?
Maybe.
That's what. But didn't they were did they refer to themselves ever as Angel
is,
One
or is
did they
Angel Oneians or something? Angel Onesies.
Angel Onesies. So they go to the Council of Angel Onesies. And they're all
wearing jumpsuits.
Yeah, they're all wearing jumpsuits except for the men who are wearing like this weird shimmering fabric that is just like completely open on the chest, and then like these tight pants with ballerina slippers,
and a
cod piece,
yeah,
and an earpiece, a weird like ear jewelry thing.
I think they were trying to make that look like cleavage. Is that what they're commenting on?
I think.
Is that shirt meant to be cut so it's kind of like? Yeah.
I think they're trying to say the men are sexual objects.
Yeah,
yes,
planet,
right?
Definitely.
Yeah,
yeah. But it looked very 80s.
Yes. Oh my gosh. I was thinking the whole time that their office that they walked into looked like a 1980s dojo. Like, just
yeah, pretty much. It looked like a Whitesnake video when they went down there. Much like Haven did. Like reminded me of Haven, this other episode where the costumes are just incredibly 80s. Mm-hmm. And I feel like this is one of the times when Next Gen can't really divorce itself from the time period that it's in, even though it tries to put itself in the future.
Yeah, yeah. And I am recently, I know this isn't what this show's about, but I've been recently revisiting the original series. I've never actually seen it before. And since we're doing this podcast, I was like, I should get some context for Star Trek outside of the Next Gen Deep Space Nine kind of universe. And the original series is also really stuck in its own time. Like, Star Trek just can't help themselves but be a reflection of what's going on.
Yeah, so there's this in the super 80s conference room, and the chief minister, or I'm not really sure what
mistress.
Her... Chief mistress.
Chief onesie.
Chief onesie is this woman named Beata, and she does not trust these people. We're not really sure what's going on, but we know that A... they don't like whoever these survivors are, and B, they don't like that the Federation is here. Mm-hmm. So they're like, they kind of very grudgingly allow them to go look for these people.
It feels like they're hiding something.
It does.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I love, Riker goes to Troy and says, okay, what are your thoughts? And then Troy goes, well, there's a lot of hostility. And he goes, yeah, I know. And so why have an empath there?
Right.
Because it was very clear that it was hostile.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
My more beef with Troy. I have beef every time because all she does is restate what everybody already knows. It's like, just in case you weren't paying attention, we just exited a relatively aggressive scene.
Right. Yeah. So there's like a very hostile meeting. They're led to this chamber by a guy who looks like a tiny Conan O'Brien.
He does.
His name is Trent. And I guess he's like the receptionist or something. Leads them to this room. And yeah, they have this exchange where it's just like, well, what happened in there? That was a tense meeting. Thanks, Troy. Way to go. Way to tell us what we just saw.
Yeah. I mean, right. In this episode, at least she has purpose and value because she's the one who can communicate
right.
with everybody.
Yeah, because they respect women.
Yeah. But this is the first episode where it's like her input matters, but they still have these throwaway lines that are so pointless. I don't know.
Well, I mean, one thing that she does point out is that, like, well, we do know that because they were so hostile about their survivors, they're definitely here. So we know that. So she was able to, like, kind of glean
that. Identify that.
Right.
Also, she has amazing hair.
So she does have
she
great
does
hair.
She does bring that to the episode.
Deanna Troi?
Yes, she does.
I guess I've never thought about that before. My friend Lindsay was on this show earlier, and she's like seems to be a total Troy fan too.
Yeah, there's a lot of Troy heads out there.
Yeah, a lot of Troy heads out there.
I feel like women relate to her because she is an empath. You know,
yeah.
I don't know. I mean, that's my opinion.
Yeah,
as a strong woman,
absolutely
fit right in on Angel One. Yeah. Well, I mean, the other thing I think that they point out is that like Yeah, it's a society that is dominated by women, but the government is still terrible and like oppressive.
Yeah,
because they have to make that allegory that it's like, this is like when men run things
yeah.
In the world that we live in. Mm-hmm. So it's not a good government because they have to make this allegory. And I think, you know, like you said, Catherine, this is where it kind of starts to get strange. Mm-hmm. But you know, we cut to the ship very briefly for the weirdest part of the show.
You're using weird a lot
in
this
am,
episode.
Because
Patrick.
It is a very bizarre episode.
Yeah, that's fair.
So there's this exchange where Picard and Worf are going past the holodeck. The door opens, a snowball hits Picard, and I guess Wesley and his friend, who we still don't know, have finished their skiing lesson. Picard is pissed. He has this like testy conversation with Wesley, and then Worf is like, I smell something.
Yeah, and he name drops like, something.
He name drops something that I didn't catch because it's some alien shit from the Klingon home planet. Mm-hmm. And Picard's like, yeah, I smell that too. Wesley's like, I didn't smell anything.
But I'm a little congested.
Right, yeah. And they're like, oh, okay. See you later.
But Picard was so intensely angry about
yeah.
it.
Yeah, he was so mad.
Like,
yeah.
I was thinking later, I'm like, oh, maybe this illness makes you like irrationally angry or something. I don't know. But
he wouldn't have
really
had it yet.
Yeah.
Exactly. It didn't make sense.
Yeah, so
that's when he would have gotten it.
Yeah, we find out later that this is like an illness, the source of an illness. But we don't know this at this point. So we're just watching. Mm-hmm. It's like, what the hell just happened?
Yeah.
So back on the planet, there's like a parallel where, Data is messing around with perfume. He doesn't know what perfume is. Mm-hmm. And then someone's like, oh, it's an aphrodisiac. She's like, oh, what's an aphrodisiac?
So this is where it's like, how do you not know what an
right.
aphrodisiac is?
You know everything.
Yar is explaining it to him. It's like, Data, you had sex with Yar.
Yeah.
How do you not know what this is?
Right. Yeah. We could make the argument that, polywater is an aphrodisiac.
Right.
Yeah. That's from episode 2.
Okay,
yeah.
I was like, sure, I'm just going to ride that out.
Yeah, it's probably best you
Well, that's from The Naked
episode.
Now. Yeah,
yeah.
I liked it, but Patrick didn't.
But yeah, there's a very talked about scene where Data...
Well, Data is anatomically correct, and he has sex with Tasha Yar.
He is or he isn't?
He is.
Okay.
Yeah. He's
fully functional,
he's fully
as he
functional,
says.
Is what he says. And she seduces him, and then we had a whole debate about this. Go back and listen to the Naked Now episode. there's a really interesting sexual tension that occurs now between Tasha and
right,
Data
because,
on a relatively regular basis.
Yeah, Tasha is trying to explain the sex thing to Data, and it just seems, you know, weird that he doesn't know that already. Yeah. Anyway, there's this thing about perfume, and it really is only to set up that later at the end, Trent comes and puts the perfume on himself.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it's like, oh, yeah, that's right. The gender roles are reversed on this planet.
Yeah.
That's the only reason they put that there.
And ostensibly, the audience is supposed to be like, oh, ha ha.
Right. You know? Yeah. Men wearing perfume.
That's crazy.
But men wear cologne.
I know. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's not
that weird.
Yeah. No.
No. And people stink sometimes. Yeah. It's nice to have something to put something on.
I appreciate a nice smelling man.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Me too. And woman. Anybody who smells.
Exactly.
It's better than stink.
It's so true.
But they talk to Beata again, the chief mistress. And she says, well, look, you know, we voted on it. It wasn't unanimous. But we'll let you look for these people. There's 4 of them. They're somewhere on the planet. We don't know where. And they're like, whoa, well, why? Oh, because they're fugitives. So these 4 guys, they were all men, by the way, are outlaws somewhere living on the planet. And she's very adamant that, like, these are dangerous people. So
she calls them revolutionaries.
Yeah, they're basically, mm-hmm. yeah. So they're like this anarchist collective now that's somewhere on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
And then meanwhile on the ship, Wes is, like, super sick in the sick bay. His mom, the doctor, does not seem to be too concerned with it. You know, she's just telling Picard, like, oh, yeah, some bug going around. My kid's dying.
Which, she doesn't think he's dying
right,
at
not
this
yet.
Point. But which is interesting because we know that they've cured the common cold. So
yeah.
Like a cough mm-hmm. or a respiratory illness like that, the fact that anybody's showing any symptoms like that is probably like,
should be
a huge emergency right away.
Yeah, because she doesn't know what it is.
Yeah.
She's like, I have to develop a vaccine for this new illness that we haven't discovered and my kid has.
Mm-hmm.
But she doesn't seem too concerned.
She's confident.
Right. Okay. Well, so she's got to look for a vaccine. And back on the planet, Data's like, well, I know a way that we can find these guys. They have no platinum on this planet. So if we scan the planet for platinum, you know, the Federation has that. Maybe there's traces. We can zero in on them that way. And so LaForge is, you know, starting to scan the planet. You know, spoiler, they do eventually find them.
Well, you skipped over a part. So LaForge is scanning the planet because Picard has now become sick.
That's right.
Picard, Riker is on the away team. Yeah. So LaForge is now taking command of the bridge.
Yeah. So, yeah, and Worf is getting sick, too.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Worf is Klingon sneezing because that's the only way he knows how.
People are dropping like flies.
Yeah, right, they are. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it seems like every time they send an away team, just shit goes down on the ship.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah, and the other thing is that the ship has to meet in the neutral zone, which I'm still not sure what that is because I don't watch the show.
The neutral zone is a part of space that nobody occupies. So if you are going to do battle somewhere, it's kind of okay to do it in the neutral zone.
This is like meet me at the tree outside the school at 3 p.m.
Well, it's all based off of naval warfare.
Oh, right.
And so it's that part of the ocean where that nobody can own or possess. So you're not like, because it's a big deal if the Romulans were to come into the Federation space. Like that's a huge deal. A bunch of ships would be there. It'd be a whole thing. Mm-hmm. In the neutral zone, it's kind of like, hey, anything goes. Now, it's scary.
It's like international waters.
Exactly. Exactly. Okay.
It's like pirate stuff.
Yeah, totally. Mm-hmm.
So there's a Romulan fleet, and the Enterprise is supposed to show up at a battle, basically. Or it wasn't really clear what
there's
the
a battle going on, and the Romulans are winning.
Okay. That so the Enterprise is supposed to go in for support?
Yes.
And
well, it is the best ship that the Federation has is
really?
The Enterprise. Yeah, that's their signature ship. That is the flagship.
I had no idea.
Yeah, that's the best that they have.
See, this whole time when I was mad because they put Wes on the bridge of this ship, I was like, they're putting a kid in charge of a battleship. You're like, it's a research vessel.
It is a research vessel.
But also it has like massive torpedoes and bombs and stuff.
Of course, because you don't know what you're going to get.
And not only does it have all those things, but it is the most powerful one that the Federation has.
Yeah, it's the one they're most proud of. Yeah.
That a 14-year-old is an officer
He's like an intern.
He's an officer. He's an ensign. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, well, that's why they have that ship going and exploring, because that's what it's like their first foot. It's what they lead with.
Oh, okay.
Do you know how many people are supposed to live on the Enterprise?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, man, I don't remember now, but it's a lot more than on the original Enterprise and Next Gen because there's families or in original series versus Next Gen because there's families and stuff on it. It's a lot. Oh, boy, I'm blanking though. I don't know if it's 300 or 1,000. It's a lot, though.
Well, at this point, a third of them are sick. The Enterprise has to go to this battle, and meanwhile, they also have to look for survivors on the planet. So
I'm Googling this so the internet doesn't yell at me because we've talked about this before.
Sorry to throw a wrench at you guys. I was just thinking when she was talking, like, okay, these 12 kids are sick. They were on a field trip. I was like, whoa, that's a lot of kids. Like,
there's approximately 1,000 people.
Okay.
Yeah.
So about 300 of them are sick now. And this is when the vessel has to go meet the Romulans in battle. But they also have to wait until they get these fugitives or survivors from the Odin, which was the freighter that was hit. Mm-hmm. Back onto the vessel.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of shit going on, basically. But they do zero in on where the guys are. They find like some cave, I guess, and there's this MacGyver-looking dude.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he did look like
MacGyver. He looks a lot like MacGyver. I thought it was him.
Yeah, yeah.
At first. And he's just like, hey, what's up? been here for a long time. He doesn't seem excited or anything.
Not or concerned or anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is where things started to feel very men's righty.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. This is the uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Which, to be fair,
it is an allegory.
And men's rights, that whole thing didn't exist when this was being created.
So true.
So to be fair to the writers, they didn't realize what they were commenting on.
Right, yeah. So because this is supposed to be an allegory for how women are treated in our society, they just, you know, reversed it. Mm-hmm. He's out living in the wilderness because he doesn't like how men are treated on Angel One.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which is super men's right. Yeah.
Because remember, in this allegory, men are the oppressed class. But apparently, like, they've taken they've gotten married, they've had kids, and he's like, look, I don't want to leave. I like it here. Mm-hmm. I just don't like how men are treated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So they can't convince him to go.
Yeah, and since he wasn't part of the Federation, they can't make him go because that would be in violation of the Prime Directive, which makes me so confused because what part of the Prime Directive is that?
Yeah, I thought the Prime Directive was just like, if there's a planet that doesn't have warp
drive,
then you can't mess with them?
You can't mess with their internal politics.
But that's what they're doing right now, right?
Yeah, but Angel One must have access, must have warp drive.
I guess.
They have to, or just being there would be in violation of the Prime Directive. But how would just grabbing a guy off of a planet who was part of the Federation, or at least under the protection of the Federation, what does that have to do with the Prime Directive?
I don't know.
But could they get around that if they had to go there to like rescue some of their people, the Prime Directive?
See, no, kind of. What they do is they the Prime Directive is very gray in mm-hmm. Next Generation. And they have gone to planets and snuck around to avoid violating.
They do it in the first episode.
Yeah, they mm-hmm. violate it in the first
episode. Yeah, they straight up mm-hmm. violate it. Yeah. Yeah.
Which you're not supposed to do, obviously.
Yeah. But
got it.
Yeah, so they invoke the Prime Directive again, once again, like muddying the waters about what exactly that is.
Someday we're going to do a Prime Directive deep dive and really understand this thing because they quote it all the time.
And yeah.
And the rules are so inconsistent.
Speaking of violating the Prime Directive, Riker has to go meet with Beata and he is wearing the traditional outfit of a man on Angel One, mm-hmm. Which is just like, you know, this weird open scarf top.
But he's revealing a very hairy chest.
Yeah, an incredibly hairy chest.
Picture an ABBA concert from the
1970s.
Is basically the outfit they're wearing.
Yeah, pretty much like a Prince cover, album cover from the late 70s.
Yeah.
Prince.
Yeah.
R.I.P.
Prince. Yeah. It's basically, he's wearing the cover from Dirty Mind. So he has to go meet with Beata, and he's supposed to figure out what is going on and convince her to let them take the escapees or the shipwrecked people back. But they just have sex. That's pretty much all.
She goes for it.
She does.
Right away.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what I was saying earlier. Riker can't help it.
Yeah, but I strongly felt like he was uncomfortable with this. Like,
yeah.
This was straight up sexual harassment. And he like, but he looked so conflicted. Like he was like kind of into it and attracted to her, but then also like moving away from her. Like you got a vibe that he was not 100% down with.
Yeah.
How this
especially
was
at the beginning of that scene.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Where he did feel like, yeah, she was very much pushing herself.
Cause again, mm-hmm. the gender roles are reversed. Like she was, you know, treating a guy like shit, you know, and using her position of power as leverage because that's a thing that happens to women. Mm-hmm. That's what they're trying to say.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But Riker was okay with it.
Yeah.
Well, because Riker's kind of a sleazeball.
And then what does that say?
Right. I know.
like if you
women
try hard
secretly
enough.
Secretly really into it.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you try hard enough, it will work out for you guys. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think Riker, too, if there's anybody who would be in the support of a very strong, independent, sexually realized woman, that is Riker. Like, he mm-hmm. wants women
right,
to
so
do
he
that.
Was super into it.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's like, well, the entire point of this allegory was to show how messed up, you know, the world that we live in is to women, but they just completely ruined that by putting Riker in this situation where it's just like, yeah, you know, people are pressured into sex, just like Riker. It's like, Riker is never pressured into sex. That's his default position. He's like, wants to have sex.
Yeah. He was also really excited to put that outfit on.
Yes.
And I think he knew, like, what this was leading to.
Oh, yeah.
Even at that point, he was like, yes.
He knew, because he had and we skipped this, because it's a very minor scene, but he had the part with Tasha and Deanna Troi, where they kind of, like, laughed at him and called him sexy, and he kind of, like, flaunted in front of them a little
bit. He's a bit of a peacock, basically.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Hey, man, he knows he's got it until he grows that beard and then he loses it all.
I always thought people preferred Beard Riker.
I think it's just because what we're used to. I do think he's I'm sorry, Jonathan, but he's more handsome in the first couple seasons. He ages. You know, he's a guy who gets a little older. His hair's thinning by the end of it. He's a little thicker in the hips.
I think a lot of times beards they use to cover up a little paunch. If you're getting a little heftier.
Yeah. So meanwhile, back in the ship, again, everyone is getting sick. LaForge is in charge. They try to like beam back because they have, they want to get everyone back onto the ship so you can go to the neutral zone to fight the Romulans, but everyone is sick. Mm-hmm. So this prevents that entire thing from happening.
Yeah, so, Beverly Crusher won't let anybody back on the Enterprise.
They were also getting some resistance from the people there first, too,
right,
before they even convinced them to go back to the ship.
Yeah.
They were like, no, we don't want to go. We'd rather face execution than go back to your ship and enjoy our lives.
Yeah. So they're like, they want to go get Ramsay. Ramsay is the name of the MacGyver guy.
Mm-hmm.
We find out that Ramsay is also married to one of the people that was on the council.
Bum, bum, bum.
Yeah. So we see her, one of the people from the beginning of the episode, when he mentioned some of us have even taken wives, one of them is the people on the council.
Mm-hmm.
So that's...
Suddenly her behavior is clear.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, that's why she voted against rescuing them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And this gets even more complicated because, so these guys don't want to leave. The only purpose is the Federation came and they promised to take these people off the planet. When Trent, Tiny Conan O'Brien, comes in to inform Riker and his new girlfriend, Beata. and it's a very weird situation because Trent is clearly like uncomfortable with what's going on here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, he sees them kissing, right?
Yeah, he does. Yeah. And
I think he's her boy toy.
Yeah, I think he is. That's what
I think so too.
Because there's clear jealousy.
Yeah.
Well, he's kind of the sexual slave to her.
Basically.
Right? Oh, maybe.
Because he does everything she asks. He runs her errands. And then she's so dismissive of him.
Right.
Yeah.
I think that, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So
I also love at this part, Riker pulls out that it's like this sphere.
The meditation crystal?
Yeah, the meditation crystal. And he literally touches the top and it turns on. And she goes, ooh, impressive.
Right.
It's like, boy, you just touched the thing.
Yeah. It's got a light bulb in it.
Yeah.
Chill out, lady.
Yeah. She was like, ooh, you're smart. She said something like
maybe
that
crystal is an aphrodisiac.
Oh. Maybe.
You know?
Oh,
I don't know, because
okay.
She loved it.
Yeah. Well, she was already...
She's already into Riker.
She was
maybe
aphrodisiac.
Maybe just sent her over the edge.
Yeah. Well, relaxed her. She's got a lot on her mind.
She does.
Yeah,
we
so...
We have a planet?
Yeah. A whole M-class planet to run.
Yeah.
So basically, now that the situation is that Ramsay won't leave, the Federation can't take him off, she's like, well, I'm just going to kill him. So
she has to,
basically. He's considered a revolutionary that could, you know, upend their whole female-dominated order, which is, again, weird to say and think about. I know they're trying to do an allegory,
mm-hmm.
but just basically, man, we gotta kill this dangerous men's rights activist. back on the ship, Picard is very sick.
Yeah.
And there's this scene where like Crusher is like trying to feed him medicine or something.
And it was another one of those scenes with that awkward sexual tension that we get every once in a while. Just every once in a while, there's some sexual tension between those two.
But the reason this scene is important is because they talk about that smell, that Klingon thing.
Yeah, that Worf talked about.
That Worf talked about. She deduces that, that was the source of whatever sickness this is. So we know that now.
But where did it come from is the bigger question, right? Because didn't it just appear from that?
They never explain.
They never take.
Oh, you know what, though? Maybe she did mention that field trip. So maybe they went somewhere.
So the holodeck can produce that?
Oh, I don't know. If the field trip was just to the holodeck, then that doesn't make sense to me.
Oh. Right, because the first people to get sick were Wesley and his friend who are on the holodeck.
Yeah.
But that is super confusing because how we know, based on the Long Goodbye, that organic organisms created within the holodeck cannot leave the holodeck.
Hmm.
So if it's a a virus isn't like a bacteria. Can you create a virus within the holodeck and then bring it out?
That's
messed up. Because you could bring...
Why have the holodeck?
Yeah.
Once again,
yeah,
a place where...
Get
like,
rid of that thing.
Right.
Someone could sabotage the ship from
within. Yeah, you
from
could
within.
Kill everyone.
Yeah,
yeah.
See, I don't know.
It also, like, we did an episode about the holodeck a couple Pat Treks ago, and one of the things that it does is like, when it breaks, it just vaporizes everything inside.
Yeah.
It's like, who designed this thing?
You know you're supposed to go in, humans are supposed to go inside of this room.
And more times than not, the doors stop working.
Yeah.
It happens all the time.
But let's send kids on a field trip in there. Yeah. That's a good idea.
This you know, virus-creating machine that can vaporize you when it breaks.
Yeah, but then Snow and Lipstick can leave.
Yeah, apparently.
We saw his Lipstick leave in a previous episode, and now we've seen the snowball came out and hit Picard. I don't know.
It's not very weird.
But meanwhile, back on the planet, Data and Riker are talking about this battle. Apparently, things are going south for whatever the Federation vessel that's there. So they're like, all right, look, got to get the Enterprise there. And Yar, I think, points out that, well, you know, it can fly on autopilot. It can fly on autopilot, apparently, but it can't do well in battle unless it has, like, a full contingent of the crew.
Right.
So even if it gets to the battle, everyone is sick. So, like, all three of these things need to be solved. I don't know. The fly on autopilot thing was weird to me because it's like, wait, you can just, like, hit a button, make it do whatever on its own?
Well, yeah. I mean, it can go in a straight line.
Oh,
you know,
yeah, I guess it's like an emergency safety feature because, I mean, even airplanes can't, can't they do
that? They have auto landing, I think.
Yeah.
Like, in case of emergency, it's always better to have a pilot.
Sure. I mean, I'm sure it's a lot more dangerous to not have people manning the helm, but, you know, it wouldn't make... I feel like if I built a starship, I would make a button on it where it's like, return to Earth! And then you could just press it. Anybody could press it, and the thing will go back home.
Yep.
Yeah, so the other thing that happens is Beata, the chief mistress, is telling everyone, all right, Ramsey's here, his people are here, all these people are going to be executed tomorrow. So the stakes just get higher and higher. Mm-hmm. Riker's pissed. He tries to talk her out of it, and, you know, it's not going to happen. He's like...
her hands are tied. I mean, it's...
Do you really think so? I thought she was like... The dictator, basically.
No, because everything they do comes to a vote.
Oh, yeah, she is the elected one. That's
what she's
called.
Yeah, she's the elected one. So she runs the vote, and I think she has more sway.
And men can't vote. That's the other thing that we know. Yeah.
But she has sway and stuff. But if the council decides something, it's decided.
Yeah.
She's then the one who executes it.
So Riker, at this point, wants to violate the Prime Directive, which I guess is... taking this Ramsey guy by force because Ramsey doesn't want to go, even though he's going to be executed.
Yeah.
I guess he's speaking for everyone here at this point.
Which it is like a group of like 25 with women and children.
Right.
And
it's like, why don't you take a poll before you make this
decision? Yeah. It's like, well, nope, I won't go. It's like, you know, you're going to be killed tomorrow, right? Yeah, I don't want to be killed either. Okay, so you're going to go, right? Nope. But they can't beam them aboard anyway because Crusher's saying, no, there's a virus on the ship. So the only person that can go up is Data because he's an android.
Yeah. They use this to their advantage quite a bit in the series.
I mean, who wouldn't?
The fact that Data can go places that humans can't.
It's a really good like narrative device. Both the transporters and Data being an android that is not affected by biological stuff.
Yeah.
Because if they need to move the plot forward, they're just like, well, you know.
Send that guy.
Send that guy. He's a robot. Yes.
Android.
Mm-hmm. Oh, an android. Sorry.
Yeah. It's okay.
Plus, then you get to explore robot sex, apparently.
Yep. Yeah.
So, I mean, just so
That's
many fun
That's not a plus
things.
To me.
So many fun things.
The robot sex thing, the android sex thing gets really weird. Mm-hmm. We'll talk about it off mic. We already talked about it far too much.
So LaForge is sick, too. So, Riker's like, okay, go up there and go to the neutral zone as soon as you can. And then the next day, Trent, the tiny Conan O'Brien elf guy, goes to Riker and Yar and they're like, hey, you know, do you want to watch? He said something like our values be confirmed or reaffirmed. And he's trying to say execution.
Right. Basically. But they're upholding. I think it's upholding our values or something is what they called it.
Yeah. And, you know, they're like, no, I don't want to see that. And then Data comes and talks to them and says, look, I know you told me to go to the neutral zone as soon as possible, but I calculated that's 48 minutes.
Yeah,
he does some algorithm where he's just like, look, you got 48 minutes to get those guys onto the ship to for Crusher to cure this virus and for us to go to this battle. So 48 minutes to tie this all together.
Right.
So they change their mind. They're like, you know what? I think we will see these people be executed.
Values upheld.
Right. And they take them to this execution chamber where they try to show how it works. And there's a couple things that I noticed about it. Like, one, it looks like a Trapper Keeper cover.
Yes.
That Like, it's just this two little boxes that they vaporize, like this vase, just to show them how it works.
I was like, what is happening?
Yeah. Right.
Well, and apparently, like, you
I don't
have
even
a,
understand what I saw.
You have like a sphere in your hand.
Yeah, it's powered by a crystal. And this is the other thing I noticed. So Trent hits the button. Trent is a receptionist, a sex slave, and an executioner. This guy, he just gets the shittiest jobs.
Yeah. It's all the jobs that women don't want to do.
Poor man.
Again, it's the allegory going on, you know?
I mean, maybe he would have wanted to go back to the ship. He should have. They should have asked him.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, he probably would.
Get me out of here.
Actually, I think he's in love with her.
I
think he is a little
bit. But
maybe
he's brainwashed, you know?
Yeah. Maybe it's like Stockholm a Smithers, syndrome. Mr. Burns situation. Yeah. He's just like totally unrequited. So at this point they put Ramsey in the Trapper Keeper vaporizer thing, and you're for sure he's about to die. And Riker goes with this huge speech about, like, look, you're going to turn him into a martyr, and martyrs can't be stopped because they're an idea. And just because you kill him, it doesn't mean that, like, his ideas are going to go away. You know, like, he stands for a righteous cause, and everyone on this planet, you know, the tensions are starting to bubble up.
He's not leading a revolution.
He's an evolution.
Yeah, it's an evolution.
Of the great cause of men's rights.
But his point was, because again, if we think about how humans are now, humans are completely equal. Equality, except
for the Federation.
For the Federation, right, exactly. Yeah. And so humans have already been through this process, and they have evolved to a point where there is no war, there is no hunger, there is no racism, there is no sexism. And he's saying to her that that's the direction you're moving in now, and it's a good direction to go. And if you try to fight it, you can't. Mm-hmm. And so you're just going to make it go faster if you kill these guys.
Oh, okay. So they adjourn at the last second.
Yeah.
To go and I guess talk about that. Crusher gets an inoculant at this point. So she figured out, you know,
just in time.
Just in time. So that's one thing solved. Data's like, you know, talks to Riker. He says, okay, look, ready for you to return. Riker's like, okay, well, we got to wait for this Ramsey guy. The mistresses come back, and Beata, the elected one, is like, well, I don't want things to change. But I could at least keep progress to a slow crawl.
Which I thought was so funny.
It was so funny. It was like, you know what? At first I was mad. I was like, that is exactly what, like, some shitty elected official would say.
Yeah, totally. Totally.
And then they all smile meaningfully at each other.
Right.
They do.
But one thing that I didn't catch until I was reading the synopsis is Beata exiles Ramsey.
Yeah.
So Ramsey gets to stay. They all wanted to stay, but she's like, I'm going to send you to a shittier part of the planet.
Yeah. Oh,
God. He was already in a cave.
He was already in a cave.
Why don't you just send him back where he was? He had a life in that cave.
They had kids.
Yeah. So they beam whoever wants to go back to the ship, which is all the Federation people. Ramsey and his people, I guess, go to some even more inhospitable part of Angel One to live out their terrible lives under this, you know, thing where change will definitely not happen in their lifetimes.
No. It's... Well, intentionally so. It's going to move very slowly.
Right.
And before they leave, we see Picard back on the bridge, but he's got a very hoarse voice. And he tries to give Data a command where he goes, and then Riker, like, knowingly nods at Picard and goes, engage.
Right.
Yeah. That's the episode.
So they go to the battle.
Yeah, they get there. They go to see the Romulans. Probably a more interesting story.
I know.
We get to see
this very interesting part of it was just like not part of the episode.
No, the impending threat of the Romulans made me laugh just because they've used that plot device before and they're going to use it again. Where it's something bad is happening far away that we need to get to.
if they had addressed that, then they wouldn't have been able to address the more important issue, the social justice issue
of men's rights.
Of men's rights that they were trying to point out.
So, Catherine, this is the part in the show where we like to rate the episode. Okay. Now, we do it on a 3-point scale.
Mm-hmm.
We say set to kill. That means it was an amazing episode. You would recommend it to everybody. If you want to watch Star Trek The Next Generation, this is an episode to watch. Then we have set to stun. Set to stun is like, if it comes up in the queue, if you're watching through it, definitely check it out. Mm-hmm. And then there's leave it in the holster. And that's like, avoid it, skip it, never never watch that one again, right? Mm-hmm. For me, that episode is the battle. So how would you rate this episode?
I guess I would say set to stun.
Oh, okay.
I think that, I mean, I guess I don't really have much to compare it against. But I thought it was really entertaining. I think that, you know, it is interesting to see how they were addressing these issues, you know, the allegory for, you know, women's rights, humans' rights, civil rights, you know, all the rights.
men's rights.
Men's rights.
All the classic rights.
All the classics. And I thought it was cool to check out. I think also, if you just want to check out some awesome fashions, check it out.
Cool, cool. Patrick, what did you think?
All right, so I'm going to say set to stun only. The only thing saving it from leave it in the holster is the costumes, because the costumes were hilarious.
Mm-hmm. Wow, yeah, yeah.
But yeah, like, I think there's a lot of things going on here that I don't think it addressed well. Mm-mm. I like the allegory. I like the Star Trek allegories. Like, those are fun, but maybe I'm not being fair because I'm kind of viewing it from a lens where, you know, I grew up with the internet and I know like what shitty men's rights stuff is. So I can't like see this without viewing it through that lens. But even with that, like, there are times where they just kind of destroyed their own purpose, like making Riker actually like the sexual harassment, mm-hmm. you know, that just didn't work for me. And then the other thing of, well, there's this much more interesting thing happening that we're not even going to show or talk about beyond just part of the, you know, the narrative.
Yeah.
But man, those costumes were hilarious. So I'm going to say set to stun. It's worth a watch.
Well, you guys, I think we're all in agreement. I'm going to give it a set to stun as well. And you know what I'm going to say? Nice try, Star Trek. Nice try. You're going to do it a lot better later when we're out of the season one muck. And they really do want to comment on society. They do. And the writing team made an attempt at it. And I think, to your point, Patrick, there were a lot of things that kind of negated their own purpose.
Yep.
And it wasn't really that good of an execution. But hey, they went for it. You got to go for it if you're going to succeed. And it's not the worst episode. I enjoyed myself. I kind of liked the role reversal. I liked the idea of that quite a bit, mm-hmm. especially, you know, if we think about this is the 80s, where gender equality was a big issue that people were talking about a ton.
Right.
So this was Star Trek, The Next Generation's way of adding their own two cents into
it. It was their very special episode.
Yeah. And I agree. I think I agree with the intention of the episode. I think I guess that's what it is. I agree with what they were trying to do,
yeah.
But I don't think they did it all that well.
I admire it. I admire their attempt.
Yeah, exactly. I can respect it, yeah. But it's kind of like a Modern Family episode where you're just like, well, you're trying.
Yeah,
to
you're
do
trying.
it's not really working for me. Well, very cool. Well, this was a fun one. Thank you so much for coming by, Catherine.
Thanks, guys, for having me. It was a blast.
Of course, anytime.
Oh, thanks.
So Patrick, is there anything you want to talk about before we get out of here?
Yeah, listen to Patrick, rate us on iTunes, 5 stars, because that makes us show up in the algorithm, mm-hmm. I think, better. And also listen to Politic Toff. It's my other show with Zach Mass. It's just a weekly news roundup with wacky guests on it.
Yeah, it's awesome. Catherine, what about you? Anything you want to talk about?
No. I have nothing to plug.
Big thing is I just submitted the RSS feeds to Google Play. Google Play is now taking podcasts.
Oh, cool.
So it should be approved in the next day or so. So probably by the time this is out, we are on Google Play. But just know that that's a place where we are at, and feel free to rate and review us there. Of course, as Patrick said, hook us up with the iTunes thing, the old standard. Listen to my other podcast. It's called Making New Friends. Check out Peaches and Hot Sauce. Follow me on Twitter at Pat Likes a Tweet, because Facebook is for noobs. I think that's it, right?
Engage.
He said engage.
Peaches. Hot sauce. Peaches.